And welcome to another episode of Gopher Gridiron Radio. I am Luke Buer.
And I am GopherIllustrated.com publisher Ryan Burns. And we welcome you guys back to Hey, We're the Number 7 Team in the Country podcast. As Gopher football pulls off the upset, the TCF Bank Stadium era. We're going to spend a lot of time on that today. But your number now 7 Golden Gopher football team. Luke, in the year of our Christian Lord, 2019, we're talking about a Gopher football team ranked number 7 in the country.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about a team that could be potentially undefeated heading into the Wisconsin game. We're talking Rose Bowl. These are all very plausible things now. I don't know what life is anymore, but for all you, for all the bandwagon fans now on the train, after you saw your Gopher football team really be the better team throughout that entire game and then end up pulling off the win, we welcome you to this Gopher football podcast. And there's going to be a lot to get into today, including some PJ Fleck contract talk, because we got to get into that just yet, and then a look ahead. But before we get into any of that, Luke, do you want to give the folks a word from our sponsor?
Yeah, so if you're new to the podcast, our podcast is sponsored by the Goal Line Club. If you have no idea what that is a booster club that supports only Gopher football. So if you want to check out any of the things that they have to offer, you want to become a member, go to goalineclub.org. Also, they have things like the preview that was, I was not able to make it, but I heard it was elite with Bobby Bell and Coach Burns. That was awesome. Also, they have a tailgate. If you want to save $5 on either of those and you're not a member of the Goal Line Club, for the Wisconsin week, use the promo code AXED. AXED5, and that'll save you $5. All right, Ryan, I just do want to say one thing. I got one thing right in the prediction here for the Penn State Minnesota game. I said it was going to be 31 for the Gophers. I nailed that. I just didn't get the winner correct. I didn't get the winner correct. I was correct on the over. I had 35-31, but at the end of the day, I will much rather take a Gopher victory over me being right in a prediction any day of the week.
I mean, I was 28-24, so if you took the over and listened to us on these Vegas props, you were doing pretty good. Or if you even took Minnesota plus 6.5, you're welcome for a little bit extra money in your bank account. But, just for the lead-up for this game, Luke, 2 weeks to prepare, you had all the build-up of this being the biggest game in the TCF Bank Stadium era, the biggest home game in decades, and for Minnesota to start the way that they did with Antoine Winfield's pick, then Rashad Bateman getting loose down the sidelines, to me that was the biggest thing for this game, was you couldn't come out flat. You had 51,000 strong in that stadium. For my money, that was the best stadium experience and atmosphere that I've ever been a part of covering a Gopher football home game. The entire lower bowl, Luke, was standing the entire game.
Right.
And they were influencing, I think, Sean Clifford, the quarterback for Penn State, had a little bit, he was just off a little bit. And I firmly believe that the crowd noise played a little bit of a part in it. But, what a game from start to finish. I've even had people, my better half, her family is from Kenosha, Wisconsin. They're not Gopher fans. But I had a lot of friends and family that aren't even Gopher football fans text me after the game and say, what a game. Just what a game it was. Minnesota's able to pull off the upset 31-26, and now they're the 7th team in the country, Luke.
Yeah, so let's maybe get into this real quick. Maybe starting off the bat, let's start with the defense, which to me was definitely an X factor in this game, because the offense kind of just did what it did, right? And this was by far the best offense that I think that the Gophers faced all season. I'll say this. Sean Clifford said that everybody was there to watch him play. Well, he didn't actually show out so much.
Did you see his pregame speech, by the way?
That is what I sarcastically said.
I don't want to go expletive podcast 2 weeks in a row here, but he essentially said, F their damn boat.
Yeah.
And somebody videotaped it, and now it's gone viral on the social medias. Sean Clifford was not at his best. I think that would be safe to say, Luke.
And that didn't age well for him because, very first possession for them, he misses a guy that probably is open and underthrows him. And Winfield makes an absolutely spectacular play on the ball, right? And that's the interception that gets things kicked off. And like you said, needed a big start to keep that crowd engaged from the very get-go. And Winfield once again does it. And he's able to make a big play in a big spot, just like we actually have probably come to suspect from him week in and week out.
I'm telling you this much. If Winfield keeps doing these type of things, I mean, he was named the Walter Camp National Player of the Week.
Yeah.
All of college football. He's got 7 interceptions, which I believe leads the entire FBS football. You get 4 more games, or actually hopefully 5 more games if Minnesota makes the Big Ten championship game. But you get 5 more games of Antoine Winfield, and then he's not going to be around. Now, I know that there's some folks thinking, well, Antoine's only 5'10". It doesn't matter. You seen the NFL and how it's now a passing league and how it's now a base nickel? Have you met his father, who for my money was the best corner that I've seen wear a Minnesota Vikings uniform, the way he was able to tackle the line of scrimmage and make plays? All Antoine Winfield Jr. does is make plays every single damn week. Yes, mm-hmm. He's there for the 2 interceptions, including I didn't really think on that first one that the ball was necessarily underthrown.
Oh, I thought underthrew him.
Maybe by a couple yards, but I think Winfield was in great position there. I think Winfield located the ball before the receiver did, and then he kind of moved the receiver to where Winfield could make the play. Now, I'm not going to argue the ball maybe should have been a little bit more towards the center of the field, but I think Winfield placed himself in a great spot there.
Winfield adjusted well. I think that ball needs to be closer towards the pylon, though, because he had him beat because he had to get him to turn around and turn his hips. But yeah, absolutely. I can see where one could argue that, you know, that wasn't a terrible throw. But in the grand scheme of things, if there's a good throw, if he drops a dime,
Oregon type throw.
No. And that's the difference. Like, he was not the better quarterback on the day, and that was the difference in the game.
Trust me, we'll get into my Tanner Morgan love segment here when we get to the offensive side of the ball, or even on the second pick. I know from watching the game back this morning, and the GIF rewinds will be up very shortly here on Gopher Illustrated, and I'll get into some Gopher Illustrated promos here in a bit. But on that second pick, I know that some Penn State fans were arguing for a pass interference on Chris Williamson. Well, I could see it, but the way that Williamson played that and the way that Winfield was right there. So, Mariano Sori Marin comes in on a blitz. He gets pressure in Clifford's face.
And he hits Clifford's arm, right? So how do you know that it's not tipped? How as an official can you determine that wasn't a tipped ball and then pass interference is off, right?
I mean, I think that's – I didn't see that tip on – in real time, I get what you're saying there.
Yeah.
I think the pressure in his face forced him to put a little bit too much loft on the ball.
Yep, I agree.
Of which Winfield is just sitting back there in cover 2, and his eyes have to be the size of moon pies, just sitting there watching that ball float up in the air, and it's right to him. And Penn State receiver makes a great tackle on the sidelines, or else that's going all the way back. It even almost had another one where Sean Clifford was able to make a great throw. But you mentioned Clifford. He wasn't great. I mean, we were sitting up there in the press box, and I was thinking, is this Mitch Leidner throwing the ball? It wasn't consistent.
What a shot. That was just brutal. He did skip a couple balls, right? Like, he just threw him into the dirt.
He absolutely missed some throws that should have been touchdowns. He had his receivers drop a couple of balls that could have been touchdowns. But in that same respect, welcome to the game of college football, where that happens because we're dealing with 18, 22-year individuals. Now, he was not very good in the first half. Not at all. I mean, if you look at his first half numbers, he was 9 for 22 with 2 picks. That ain't great. Now, in the second half, he kind of got it together more, completed 65% of his passes for 200 yards and scored a pick. Even still, he was just inconsistent. And this was a quarterback coming into the game that was one of the best in the Big Ten. And I think that Joe Rossi was able to just get him off a titch. I think this crowd was able to get him off a titch, or even from that opening possession. He was just a little off all game long. He missed some throws that he had made in previous games. His receivers dropped some balls that they had caught in previous games. But once again, that's the way football goes. And I think the secondary just overall, they stood up, and I think they played well. Now, what were the 2 guys we told folks in the preview edition of this podcast to watch out for, Luke? Remember what they were?
Freiermuth and Hamler.
It's almost like those 2 both went for over 100 yards.
Yeah.
And like KJ Hamler and Pat Freiermuth were the real deal. Hamler is sensational, and he turned around St. Juiced a couple times, but in that same respect, St. Juiced was able to recover to make a couple of open field tackles that turn a 25-yard gain, and he makes the tackle into, if he doesn't make that, it's 75 to the house. And so, yes, Howden missed on the Journey Brown long touchdown run. That was him in the box. Journey Brown is also a very good football player. Journey Brown also can run a 10-8-100. Journey Brown is also the best athlete Minnesota has seen at running back. So it's going to be some adjustment, but you have Winfield having the two picks. And oh, by the way, he has 11 total tackles, which leads the team. You have Jordan Howden being in the right place at the right time. We can get into that in a second. And he's also able to make some plays. I think an underrated play there would be on that long 49-yard reception in that fourth quarter where St. Juiced gets beat and he falls down. It's Howden the one that chases him down and gets him inside the 10 there, where if he doesn't chase him down, that's a touchdown, and we're mm-hmm. talking about a completely different game, but he's able to make the hustle play there. And then you also have Coney Durr, who I thought played – I mean, it's the way Coney Durr's been playing all season, number 16 for that Gopher defense, 8 tackles – a tackle, a half a tackle for loss, a key pass breakup in the end zone there. He had another huge pass breakup. And then people, I don't want you also to forget about that two-point conversion he snuffed out. Mm-hmm. That's him leveraging back a tight end 2 yards back off the line of scrimmage to make the tackle. And that's a huge point. Instead of it being a field goal game, we're talking about it being a five-point game, and they need a touchdown.
Let's also not forget on that play, too. I agree that Coney makes the initial play, but Thomas Barber deserves some credit because the guy was going to reach.
He hustled his tush off to the sideline.
He crunched that guy from being able to stretch. I mean, that was a mm-hmm. twofold play there where Coney makes a great play. Otherwise, Barber may not have the ability to make that play.
And so let's get to that final interception on the final drive where
– Actually,
KJ Hamler's open, but Clifford isn't throwing him that ball.
No.
I think Clifford was trying to hit the underneath route, which by the way,
he got interfered with there.
Well, I don't know about that. I thought the ball was bad.
Well, I think the ball's bad, but I also think that Benjamin St. Juiced definitely holds him on that. But maybe we can agree to disagree there.
Yeah. I mean, if he sees Hamler's open.
Yeah, for sure.
But the ball isn't to Hamler. Clifford just throws it 5 yards over the guy's head, and Howden happens to be there, and Minnesota wins the ball game. But, I mean, I think the secondary really – I mean, these were going to be the best skill position players that Minnesota sees before potentially the Big Ten championship game. And I think that for how much St. Juiced and Coney Durr played, and they played a majority of the snaps at corner – they only got breathers when, I mean, they were gassed out there or something like that. But I thought that Gopher secondary really stood tall. Mm-hmm. When you watched that game back, or when you watched it live, Luke, what did you think of the run defense?
I thought initially it was not great. I thought it got better as the game went on. But initially it was suspect. And part of it was they missed tackles in the holes to make good plays, right? And then that's what broke off long runs. As the game progressed, I thought it got a little bit better. Maybe I'm misremembering. Maybe you're going to correct me here.
Well, you talk about that first quarter where Journey Brown gets 2 long runs, one being where Jordan Howden misses him in the hole, and he's off to the races. He has another one where Sorry Marin's right there, the Kamal Martin replacement, and he's not able to make the play, and he gets a long run down that sideline. But I think that when Minnesota was able to make their adjustments from that second quarter on, I mean, this was a Penn State team that really couldn't run the ball. After the first quarter, Penn State in the final 3 quarters of that game, so in the first quarter, let me preface it with this, they ran the ball, I believe, 5 times for 112 yards in the score. You're talking about over 20 yards per carry. In the final 3 quarters, they ran the ball 24 times for 66 yards.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
That's 2.75 yards per carry. Mm-hmm. And I think maybe most importantly, it was the defensive line that was the ones clogging the holes. Mm-hmm. It was Sam Renner. And I also think we need to spend some time on Jamal Teague. He was someone that got as much run as I've seen this season. Normally, it's a lot of Micah Dutredway, number 18, out there being Minnesota's nose guard. Jamal Teague, number 52, was out there rotating. I think he played a majority of the snaps as the one tech. And he was leveraging guys back in the backfield. I mean, there's a play near the goal line where Minnesota, on third and goal, it's Jamal Teague pressing back, I believe, the center, and he ends up making the play at the line of scrimmage at, like, the Minnesota four. And then on the next play, Chris Williamson's able to bat it away from KJ Hamler, and Minnesota gets a turnover on downs, which was huge, and we'll get into that. But it's Jamal Teague pressing back that Penn State offensive lineman. And I think just this entire defensive line showed well. And that was one of the things we highlighted in the preview, was how is Minnesota's front seven going to combat what Penn State's four and five star guys were. Now, I think that their offensive line was athletic, but I think that Minnesota's, I mean, Sam Renner didn't have an offer from anybody. Mike Adu Treadway had played coming into the season. And he was a highly thought of guy. That's why he went to Notre Dame, but he hadn't played in any meaningful ball games out there. And you have those two guys being your starters and them holding well. I mean, you even have Keontae Shad and Jamal Teague had some big-time offers coming out of their respective recruitments. But it was the interior of Minnesota's defensive line that I think once they figured out what the run fits were going to be after that first quarter, they played so well. And even Carter Coughlin. I mean, we've been stressing for weeks that the box score stats with Carter Coughlin don't tell the whole story. Now, I'm going to tell you, I think Coughlin was held three or four different times that could have been held, but that's been the story throughout the entire year.
Yeah.
But Carter's run fits on the day, three tackles for loss and a sack plus eight total tackles, he was so key in terms of sealing the edge, or when they tried to stretch it between the hashes and the sideline, it was Coughlin that was chasing down Journey Brown or chasing down KJ Hamler and making sure that he couldn't turn the corner. Carter Coughlin is playing some of the best football of his career at the correct time, and it's almost like there's a reason that the Senior Bowl wanted him, and he's already accepted his invite. I mean, Carter Coughlin has been playing so, so well.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's just touch real quickly. Defensively, one of the things that stood out to me is, having played in a spread offense, one of the things that I always found difficult is actually when you get into the red zone, right? Because windows get smaller, you have to be able to run the ball, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
And one of the things that Gopher defense was able to do is basically bend and not break in that red zone a lot on yesterday. So let me just real quickly, there were four different instances where they ended up with a field goal. They ended up with the end of half field goal where they got where there was the penalty, but they ended up not accepting it and kicking a 21-yard field goal. And then there was the turnover on downs, which was the great play by Williamson, right? And then additionally, the last interception, which I want to get to this last possession for Penn State and get your opinion. Like the guy fell, right? He tripped, right? Or did he get caught up to on that long reception on their last possession?
Well, do you want to start with red zone or do you want to start with that play? I guess that.
Well, I was just highlighting the red zone. They were really good in the red zone. I didn't know that. If you want to go into it deeper, we can. But they were very, very good in the red zone.
And to me, that's the biggest thing you should take away from this game is how Minnesota bended but didn't break in the red zone. We can get into that. But on that long 49-yard play where St. Juice gets beaten, Howden and Winfield are chasing him down. It looks like he was, I think he just went down. To me, it looked like he thought so too. It looked like he knew Howden and Winfield right there. He didn't want to fumble the ball or anything, so he kind of just like tumbled forward and thinking, hey, we got a minute and like 10 seconds left. We're going to have a lot of shots. Let me just go down. But that was the way it was for this Gopher red zone defense. And we talked about coming into this game on the podcast and on Gopher Illustrated about how Penn State's red zone efficiency was among the top in the country in terms of when Penn State got in the red zone, 80, 85, 90% of the time it turned into a touchdown.
Mm-hmm.
Penn State gets into the red zone six different times against Minnesota, and only two of them resulted in touchdowns.
Right.
That's the game.
Yep.
To me, that is absolutely defensively, why did Minnesota win this game? It's because they were able to, number one, prevent four different possessions in the red zone from turning into touchdowns, and they were able to prevent two of them from turning into points, period. Where you have Chris Williamson batted away on fourth and goal there. You have the defense holding a couple times to have them kick short field goals. There were just so many different times where here we are, and Minnesota's defense is able to stand tall, because this was such a good red zone offense for Penn State. You saw Pat Freiermuth, and for Lord Almighty, I swear, like, 5 of his 7 receptions were third down receptions, where it was like, here we, you know, Pat Freiermuth's getting the ball here. Minnesota even took a timeout. Penn State ran the exact same play, and it's right to Pat Freiermuth for a key third down conversion for Penn State. But even when they got in the red zone, you saw them get a tight end touchdown from a guy not named Pat Freiermuth. Something called Nick Bowers was able to get in there.
Which, but that was a great play call, because they knew that they were going to key on Freiermuth, and he was wide open.
He certainly, yeah. They, I'll get into that in the GIF rewind for Gopher Illustrated. Essentially, Freiermuth demanded a double team from the safety that was in the middle of the field, and then the backside tight end went where the safety vacated. It was a great play call from Penn State. It's almost like they're a good football team. Of which, can we discuss, Luke? Do we consider Penn State a quote-unquote real football team?
You know, I think it's going to have
to figure that out.
I think we're going to have to submit it to the board, you know, That's the fair. Real team board. But I think that they'll probably err on the side. They've already ruled on Appalachian State and Georgia Southern. Both are real teams.
That's good to know.
Yeah, really that is good to know. That is good to know. Penn State's still kind of in question, but I think that they'll rule that they were that they are a real team.
Okay, I just want a clarification on that
part. Yeah, so one thing that I do want to touch on before we close out here on defense too was that, you know, you mentioned, and I'm going to give you some props here, that what Minnesota would want to do was, you know, limit explosive plays. Now, they gave up some explosive plays, don't get me wrong, but they wanted to force Penn State into long drives. Boy, a lot of those red zones where they kind of fizzled out, those were long drives where they couldn't punch it in. And yeah. kudos to you there, because I kept thinking as they kept driving, it was like, you know, let's just get them to a third down and maybe they won't make the play. And ultimately, that is what came to be.
I mean, that was one of my keys to the game, where make Penn State drive the field and make Penn State go on these long drives. The stat coming into this game was, in October, Penn State had 16 scoring drives. Only 2 of them were 9 plays or longer, which meant that there were a lot of explosive plays in it, and just that Penn State hadn't had to drive the field for 9, 10, 11 play drives that ended in touchdowns. Well, you look at their scoring drives on the day, 4 for 69, a very nice 69-yard.
Right.
That goes for a touchdown. 7 plays, 64 yards, ends in a field goal. They have a 10-play, 69-yard drive that ends in a very nice Antoine Winfield interception. Again, make them sustain these long drives to prove that they're a legitimate offense that can go 12, 13 plays. You have them have a 13-play, 71-yard drive that Minnesota holds them to a field goal. In the second half, 9 plays, 50-yard touchdown. 9 plays, 70 yards, turnover on downs in the red zone. 8 play. I mean, you made Penn State make sure that they can drive the field. And that was the biggest thing coming into this game, was that's what Joe Rossi's defense had been so good at, limiting the run and stopping big plays. Now, you mentioned chunk plays. I mean, Penn State did have 12 in total, 17 total chunk plays on the day, where I consider a chunk play 15-plus yard pass completion and 10-plus yard running play. They had 17 on the day, but considering what they had been averaging coming in, yes, they had the explosive plays to put them inside the Minnesota 30 or the Minnesota 20, but when that field shrunk, Penn State had a lot of issues either running the ball number one or finding an open receiver to potentially get 6. And holding them with either interceptions from Winfield, Chris Williamson bats one away, or Thomas Barber coming up with some key tackles in the red zone along with Jamal Teague, holding them to 3 instead of 6, when you look at it in the scope of this game, was so huge to making sure that Penn State 26 wasn't instead 36 or 41. I mean, I can't say enough things about how this Gopher defense figured out how to, number one, adjust to the run and make sure after that first quarter, their run fits were much, much better. I talked about it on the remaining 24 carries of the game. They averaged 2.75 yards per carry. And then they really got after Sean Clifford. And I know that 2 sacks on 43 dropbacks isn't good. Trust me, I'm well aware. But the way that they were able to put enough pressure in his face to potentially put him just a titch off, that's how you see Winfield be able to grab 2 picks. That's how you see Benjamin St. Juste make plays in the, I mean, all 3 Gopher corners, St. Juste, Durr, and Williamson had pass breakups in the end zone. I mean, I thought they were good balls from Sean Clifford, but Minnesota's coverage was that much better. Again, I think overall holding a Penn State offense to 26 is pretty dang good, especially in the red zone where Minnesota held so, so well, Luke.
Yeah, so, you know, at the end of the day, when we looked at the season going in, we said a lot was going to depend on this defense because we were quite confident the offense was going to make a jump, right?
And, well, you even look at the fourth quarter. I mean, yeah. The stats in the fourth quarter are just jarring. Mm-hmm. Whereas, can you guess how many yards Minnesota had in the fourth quarter?
Not many.
Minnesota had 11.
Yeah.
They had 11 total yards. Penn State had 195. And Minnesota has the same score at the end of the game. In that fourth quarter, Penn State had 7. Minnesota had 7. But it was the defense that, yes, they allowed 195 yards, but they're essentially kind of empty yards with the way right. that Minnesota's defense, when the field got a lot shorter, they were able to stand taller.
Right. So, the, you know, like I said, at the end of the day, you know, the defense is what was going to basically make this team its money this year. And they did in this game when they needed them to. And the offense did just enough early, you know, to keep to give them the victory. So anything else you want to touch on defense? Otherwise, we'll move on to offense.
Yeah, so I do want to touch a little bit on Kamal Martin.
He was
here's the story from Fleck after the game was Kamal, it had been 3 weeks since that injury against, I believe, Rutgers was the team. He was cleared Saturday morning with a pregame, on his pregame workout with the trainer, the doctor, and he got the green light. But Fleck didn't, Fleck talked about after the game how Kamal hadn't practiced a lot during the week and he didn't want to just throw him out there to throw him out there. He wanted to be able to put him in the best spot that he potentially could. Number one, for his collegiate career, yes, but he's got an NFL career ahead of him. He also accepted an invite to the Senior Bowl this past week. So I would anticipate Kamal being back for Iowa, which is huge because I talked to a couple of defensive coaches yesterday after the game, and I know that there are some coaches on this defensive staff that firmly believe that as good as Antoine Winfield has been, Kamal is the most important player to that defense, and it makes them that much better. So I do anticipate him back. But Fleck didn't want to put him in a compromising situation, and it sounded like it killed Kamal that he wasn't able to, you know, essentially go out there and play, especially that he got the green light. But remember, I mean,
there's a lot of big games left.
And there are some very big games left, including the Iowa championship season, which starts, I mean, here on Sunday. But, you know, for all the people that think PJ Fleck's about himself, if it was truly about himself, Kamal would have played. But Kamal hadn't practiced a ton. He just got green-lighted, especially with what Minnesota has coming these last 3 weeks with road games against Iowa, Northwestern, then you have the Axe game to end it. And with like a 70, 75% shot of making the Big Ten championship game, there's a very plausible way that Minnesota's got 5 games left after this Penn State one. And they want to make sure that Kamal is as healthy as he's going to be for that final 5-game stretch. So for all the people that think Fleck is truly about himself, if he was, Kamal would have played. But he is looking out for Kamal's long-term health and his long-term career.
All right, Ryan, so before we transition and talk a little bit of offense, we probably need to hear a word from our other sponsor.
That would be the Burns Insurance Agency, which happens to be owned by my father, Mr. Bill Burns, and he wants to once again congratulate the Minnesota Golden Gophers on their big historic win over Penn State, making the Gophers 9-0 for the first time since 1904. And the stat I like to use with that, Luke, is Arizona wasn't even a legitimate state yet the last time Minnesota was 9-0. It was 1904. They were playing high school teams. Something called Twin City Central was on the schedule that year. Now, the Gophers have scored 28 or more points in each of their 9 games this year. That's the first time that's happened ever. And as an independent insurance agency, my dad has access to more than 28 insurance companies to get you the best price and the best coverage for both your business and your personal insurance needs. Now, this past week, my father was able to save a business with some different things over $10,000 with their premiums, and he got them better coverage, saved him $10,000 in a single year. That's what it's going to save them. And I know that this is a very happy business owner now that he's got $10,000 more to invest back into his business. So if you're looking for an agent who will rank you as high as a 5-star recruit and will do everything he can do to protect your business and yourself, just like the Gopher offensive line has been protecting Tanner Morgan, contact him at insuranceByBurns.com. Again, if you want to save thousands of dollars on whether it's your personal, your auto, or your business, and you're looking for a free and easy quote, go to insuranceByBurns.com.
All right, and so when we talk about this Gopher offense, they did get off to a blazing fast start, scoring 14 points in the first quarter, which was the first touchdown, actually, that was scored against Penn State's defense all year. Very impressive in its own right. And they were able to manufacture some explosive plays themselves. Headlining the Gophers this week has to be Tanner Morgan, 18 for 20, 339 yards, three touchdowns, a 17-yard average on those 18 throws. But equally right there with him had to be Rashad Bateman, who ended up with, let's see, there were seven catches for 203 yards, averaging 29 yards per catch with a long of 66 and one touchdown. And he came up in some very, very, very big spots. And, you know, he wasn't the only one. But, you know, this whole entire receiving trio it had quite the game themselves. But at the end of the day, I think the storyline of this game was, at least from the Gopher offense's perspective, when you can both effectively run and throw the ball, you put defenses into tough positions. And Penn State decided that they were going to play a little bit of zone and stack the box to stop the run. That didn't actually work out so well to start the game for them.
It was wild to see what Penn State was doing defensively, and especially that they didn't adjust. Now, they did some different things in the second half, some, but essentially what the game plan was for Penn State is what Minnesota had seen previously, where Penn State put 7-8 guys in the box and were plus one or plus two at times, and essentially daring Minnesota to throw, saying our 4- and 5-star corners are better than whatever the heck you got at the University of Minnesota. And they just didn't adjust. And it was wild to me considering – Penn State was getting gashed through the air. And Tanner Morgan, we'll get into him, but he was sensational. To me, he was the MVP of this offense. Now, you can say what you will about Rashad Bateman. He was also awesome. But Tanner Morgan going 18 for 20 with one of those being a drop by Ottman Bell. That would have been a tough catch, yeah, but that ball was right on the money. And I think the other one was a throwaway.
No, it wasn't. He missed one throw to Tyler Johnson in the corner.
That was the only miss he had on the day.
And like legitimately, Ty had him beat. And if he just puts a little bit less on it, it's a touchdown. But, you know,
adjusted completion percentage of 95% against one of the best defenses in the entire country. You throw for 339 yards and three touchdowns without a turnover. And he made some throws, boy.
Yes.
That were just, you can't place the ball any better. You look at Tyler Johnson's touchdown. And I have such a great gif of it because this was such a big game. There were a lot of different camera angles that they were able to show on the TV copy. And this ball is placed perfectly where Johnson's right hand is being taken away. Johnson puts it perfectly on the back shoulder where Tyler can just grab it with one hand. And he's able to then break the tackle and walk in the end zone. That ball couldn't have been placed any more perfectly.
Also, on that play, on that play, did you see how frustrated the safety was?
He was pissed.
He was so pissed. That was so funny.
And that was the thing where Penn State just decided we're either going to go cover two with man underneath, and their safeties were like getting somewhere. You look on that first touchdown of the game, Penn State comes with a blitz off the right side, and that leaves. So to set this up, so Minnesota has Tyler Johnson in the slot, and they have Rashad Bateman outside on the right side down there. Mm-hmm. They bring two off the edge from the right, and so there's one corner. And so what the concept is Tyler from the slot runs a bubble. So essentially he stays at the line of scrimmage, and Rashad Bateman takes off down the sidelines. So Tanner Morgan sees that he's got pressure from the right, and he knows that Johnson's running a bubble, and that means that that safety, that single safety in that center of the field, is going to have to get all the way to the sidelines. And if he can get the ball there on time before the safety gets there, Bateman is gone. So when they bring pressure, Tanner takes the snap. The only corner left there at the bottom of the screen has to honor Johnson, or else Johnson is going to be wide open. So he runs up to the line of scrimmage. Bateman takes off. He sees immediately he's wide open. Tanner gets it out to him. The safety is late getting there. Doesn't locate the ball. Bateman catches it, brushes off the contact, 66 yards for a touchdown. But I think his best throw of the day was on that final scoring drive for Minnesota. Now, to set the scene, it's 3rd and 9. Minnesota, on the previous possession, had stalled out at the Penn State 40. It was essentially in the exact same situation, and Penn State, I believe, goes cover 2. And Tanner gets pressure in his face, and he delivers an absolute dime 35 yards down the field in the soft spot in the zone where Bateman catches it, gets 2 feet in, and there we are inside the red zone. Seth Green scores a couple plays later, but Tanner was unfazed, and that's been the theme of the season for him, is in big spot games where Minnesota has been needing him most, Minnesota gets him. And you look back to that September schedule where Minnesota sneaks by 3 non-conference teams. Morgan had to lead 3 different comeback drives to either tie or win the game in the fourth quarter. Those are big pressure spots. And I really do think it prepared him for the moment that he needed to make some big spot throws, and he was able to make them. Or even on that toe-tapping Rashad Bateman catch, which was sensational, that ball, again, with pressure. When Morgan, and it's a fantastic camera angle. So, again, I would highly encourage you to check out the GIF rewinds on Gopher Illustrated or the free upon film review piece that'll be out here Sunday night. When Morgan releases that ball, Bateman isn't even out of his break yet. And I mean, that's such a timing route that needed to be perfect, and he made the throw. And that's where I wrote about on Saturday night. There isn't another Gopher quarterback that I've covered in my 9 years that makes that throw. Mm-hmm. No way. Leidner ain't making the throw. Philip Nelson, Max Shortell, Chris Strevler, Demry Croft, Connor Rota, you name them. Now, there have been a lot of bad Gopher quarterbacks throwing the ball. I get it. So the bar isn't tremendously high. But when Minnesota needed Morgan most, they got him. And he couldn't have played better to me. Now, as much as good as he was, Luke, I mean, do you want to wax poetically about this receiving corps?
Well, I mean, they probably deserve it, but I feel like that might give them a big head. But yeah, I'll do it anyway. Bateman, like we said, 7 receptions, 203 yards and a touchdown. Tyler Johnson, 7 receptions, 104 yards and a touchdown, a 14.9 yard average. Chris Ottman Bell, 3 catches, 31 yards, 10.3 yard average and a touchdown in a sensational, I believe it was 21 yard touchdown on a was that a bubble
tunnel screen?
Yeah, tunnel screen. Yeah. Actually, you're right, tunnel, not bubble.
Everybody, I get so many gripes about people with it. Here's the thing with the tunnel screen, folks, it's either going to be 1 yard or it's going to be a touchdown,
right?
And on that tunnel screen, the interior of Minnesota's offensive line could not have blocked that any better. You saw Curtis Dunlap, Blaze Andrews, and Connor Olson all get out in space, make blocks, and then Chris Ottman Bell is a guy that we don't talk enough about because he isn't technically a full-time role player, or he isn't a full-time guy like Rashad Bateman and Tyler Johnson, who doesn't get the targets that they do. But all Chris Ottman Bell continues to do on a weekly basis is catch 3 or 4 balls that seemingly are all either third down conversions or touchdowns. I know that I'm excited to see what he can do with a larger role next year when Tyler mm-hmm. graduates. So I really don't anticipate much of a drop off there.
Yeah, I would agree with you there. You know, the receiving core, you know, has gotten some praise nationally and rightfully so. But they showcased it on Saturday against Penn State. I don't think there's any question that they're one of the best receiving cores in the entire country. Learned that this week. So kudos to them. I don't know.
I will say, just like with this receiving core, yes, Penn State mixed some man and there was zone, but it was clear, and I think it was telling, now that I think about it going back through the week, that when we interviewed offensive coordinator Kirk Soraka, he was very adamant, we're not going to change our offense because they're not going to change their defense. They're going to do what they do, which to me, now thinking back on it, signifies that when Soraka had that bye week to prepare and he saw Penn State play these same looks from different teams, the same over and over again, that got the gears turning in his mind that if they're going to play it this way and you know that they're not going to adjust because they're stubborn about it, that's how Minnesota can average 18.8 yards per completion on the day. And that's where Minnesota's receivers were winning matchups. You saw the Bateman continue to find the soft spot in the zone, whether it's winning on a slant against man or whether it's finding the soft spot along the sideline a few different times. Kirk Soraka was daring Penn State's defensive coordinator to change something, but he wouldn't because he thought his athletes were better than Minnesota's, or mm-hmm. that's at least what I assume. And Minnesota was able to take advantage of that. We're talking about a receiving core on the day that has 17 receptions for 338 yards.
Right.
That's 19.9 yards per completion against one of the best defenses in the country. I mean, for my money, it's going to be essentially the most athletic defense they're going to face all year. But
here's here's the thing that really blew my mind is they basically said, like, and I get that the Gophers run the ball pretty well, but they basically said, we're going to pick that we're going to stop the run. And I know that's the conventional wisdom, but like in the end of the day, they have one of the best defensive lines in the country, right? I know that they had a guy suspended, but don't you think that you could contain the Gophers with, you know, that high powered, I guess they have high star ratings all over the place, but with that high powered defensive line, you could keep that Gopher run game in check. And then you don't, you know, give some respect to these receivers. Obviously they didn't. And the result is the result, right? And quite frankly, the Gopher receivers, you know, jump another pedestal, you know, in the national conversation. But that said, I was just surprised in their approach.
I mean, before I get to the offensive line, I do want to give Kirk Ciarrocco a lot of credit. He had a bye week to prepare, and it was clear that he saw some things on film that he really wanted to exploit. And I know that some people were a little frustrated with kind of the way that Minnesota approached this game in the second half with inside zone, outside zone, and it wasn't working at times. But you also can't deny that Minnesota just put up 31 points on a Penn State defense that, I mean, the stats are just, to give you some perspective, so Minnesota's 24 first half points were more points than Penn State had allowed at any point during the entire year.
Right.
Minnesota did that in one half. Minnesota's 321 total yards in the first half or more yards than Penn State had allowed at any point in any first half during this entire year. And those 321 first half offensive yards for Minnesota were more than what Penn State was averaging giving up in any Big Ten game this year.
Well, not to mention, just to add on that, that was the first time they'd given up a touchdown in the first quarter, right? Like there was a lot.
First quarter touchdowns that Penn State's defense had. There were a lot of things that changed for Penn State's defense that Minnesota was able to exploit. And I think Kirk Ciarrocco couldn't have called a much better game. But I also want to give some credit to this offensive line.
Right.
Now, I think the most interesting note about Minnesota's offensive game plan was the way that they mixed in their jumbo package. Now, if you go back and you watch that game, they had a lot of six offensive lineman sets where John Michael Schmitz would sometimes rotate in even mid-series. And that would put Blaze Andrews would move from right guard to left tackle. Left tackle Sam Schluter would then move to being effectively the tight end. I wish Derek Burns was here to tell you, but that is so incredibly hard to do in terms of change assignments, potentially mid-series. And you're talking about moving essentially all of your offensive linemen over a position for different calls against some of the freakiest athletes that they're going to face all year on the defensive line. And for Minnesota to have success in putting in that package and getting results, I mean, that screams to Brian Callahan, Minnesota's offensive line coach, deserving a lot of credit. That was the most I've seen the jumbo package in there. And whether it was inside zone or outside zone, I mean, statistically, this game for the running offense for Minnesota wasn't as good as it had been previously. I believe the running backs on the day, let me look it up here. It was like 31 carries for like 3.77 yards per carry. You're thinking to yourself, that's not too good.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Penn State's run defense was averaging 2.0 yards per carry. So Minnesota nearly doubled that against a defensive line as good as they're going to see all year. Yetur Gross-Matos is going to be a first-round draft pick come the spring. He leads the Big Ten with 8 tackles for loss in Big Ten play. He's got over 30 tackles for loss in his career, 15 sacks. You didn't even hear his name called. He had 2 tackles. That was it. I mean, the way that this offensive line was essentially able to alleviate pressure. Now, Minnesota only threw the ball 20 times, but they were so explosive on it because Tanner had so much time. I mean, there weren't many dropbacks where Tanner, after holding the ball for 3-4 seconds, he had pressure in his face. Now, it did happen a time or two, but the way that this offensive line was able to open some holes. Now, you weren't expecting them to open a ton of holes because I think you saw how crazy athletic these 5-star linebackers are for Penn State. And they had a combined 6 tackles for loss on the day. I know that they gave Coe Keefe some fits They gave the offensive linemen some fits there in the second half with the way that they were able to be explosive and get downhill. And you aren't going to be able to do everything you want against this Penn State front seven because they are so athletic. That's why they have as many high-star guys as they have. It's because they're freaky athletic. But Minnesota's offensive line being able to limit the number five team in the country in sack rate. They were getting a sack in, I believe, 16% of dropbacks. Well, on the day, they got one sack on 20. So instead of a 16% sack rate for Penn State, they had a 5% sack rate. Again, I can't say enough good things about the way that this offensive line came together. I thought that Curtis Dunlap arguably had his best game, the way that he was able to essentially nullify some of the Penn State defensive tackles. When Minnesota had their chunk running plays of 10 to 15 yards, it was Curtis Dunlap being able to get to the second level on these linebackers. We already talked about his play on that tunnel screen, being able to be athletic at 350 pounds in space. In this offensive line, I think I'd get him a B+, A minus, the way that they were able to really do as much as they could against what I thought was their best front seven to date.
Yeah, and you know, I think that Tanner Morgan also deserves some credit in where he has struggled probably the most this season has been pocket awareness. I thought that he had much better pocket awareness this game.
How about that scramble on third right. down, and he even slid?
Yeah, right.
And the way that he's been able to improve from essentially having very little pocket awareness and pocket movement in September, the way he's been able to change his best over the last six games in Big Ten play is a very big storyline to me because, yes, I mean, you can say what you will about sacks. I don't think they're necessarily an offensive line stack. I think they're like 60% quarterback, 40% offensive line. And so you look at how Minnesota's only given up five sacks in Big Ten play. That's the least amount of any Big Ten team. I think that's a credit to the way Morgan's been maneuvering his way around the pocket. Yes, the offensive line has gotten better at their protection, certainly. But Tanner, the way he's been able to move about the pocket, I think is certainly an underrated storyline that deserves to be talked about one bit. But, I mean, you put up 460 yards and 31 points against the best defense that you're going to face all year. You put up 18.8 yards per completion. I mean, they're really... You did that all against one of the best defenses in the country. And you don't win time of possession, but the way that you were able to move the ball against this defense, it certainly deserves to be another titch in the belt there for Kirk Schrock and the way he's got this entire offense moving right now.
We probably should touch on running back here real quick. Rodney Smith, 18 carries, 51 yards, 2.8 average. Shannon Brooks actually leads in the average with 5.5 on six carries and 33 yards. Mo Ibrahim, 7 for 33, 4.7, and probably finished the best run of the day. I don't remember. I think it was his 21-yard run. He absolutely trucked that guy.
He absolutely destroyed that safety on the sidelines. Oh, he laid the boom to him. And then, I mean, maybe the biggest play in this game that could have made this a bigger margin of victory for Minnesota was that Shannon Brooks fumble.
Yeah.
And there had been a history previously of Shannon Brooks fumbling the ball.
No question.
But I was thinking going into that drive, you know, Minnesota's running backs had really taken care of the ball really well this year. Now, if you want to blame me for thinking that, because I think correspondingly on the next play, Shannon had the fumble come back.
I do blame you.
I think it was interesting there, too, that, you know, he fumbles the ball and then Tyler Johnson is standing right next to it and he doesn't locate the ball. He dives at the pile where there's three Penn State defenders and Shannon Brooks and not where the ball was, like 3 yards right of him. But either way, Penn State's is a good football team. Some sources tell me they're a real football team and they go on and they get points off of it. I think if Minnesota doesn't fumble the ball at midfield there, they're able to go get points just the way that they had been able to move the ball offensively. But, I mean, I don't believe after that fumble that Shannon Brooks took another snap.
Yeah, I don't think Minnesota's going to need him again
here down the stretch, and I don't anticipate him being in the doghouse against Iowa certainly next week.
Mm-mm.
But it was clear that Ibrahim and Smith were going to be the guys to really finish this off. And I even think, you know, before we move to my favorite unit of this team and special teams, I mean, I think Shannon does deserve some credit on that blitz pickup where on that first quarter touchdown to Bateman, he's the one who lit up the blitzer to make sure that Tanner could set his feet and be able to drive the ball down the field. or even on Seth Green's fourth and short, where Minnesota goes for it in the second quarter, it's Ibrahim that's leaving the hole there with the physicality to allow Seth Green to get that first down, and Minnesota ends up getting points on it. That's where, once again, I mean, these running backs have been playing so well. Now, it's unfortunate that Brooks had that fumble, but for these guys to go 3.7 yards per carry against one of the best run defenses that, or arguably the best run defense that they're going to play all year, and I can't say enough good things about the way that this offense performed. I really think that you're seeing why Kirk Ciarrocca was such a hot commodity. You're seeing why Matt Simon, to me, is one of the best, if not the best, wide receiver coach in the country, considering what Minnesota is able to get here recruiting-wise. You're seeing why Brian Callahan was the National Offensive Line Coach of the Year back at Western Michigan. You're seeing a lot of different things about why this offense is humming right now, and I just think that they're gelling so well, and it doesn't really matter what the opponent is, especially if you're able to do that against Penn State.
All right, so let's talk a little bit of special teams here, just real quick. I mean, from the get-go, not particularly great with Riersa kicking the ball out of bounds.
How peak Minnesota special teams was that? Like, opening kickoff in the biggest game in years, they freaking kick it out of bounds.
Yeah, that was bad. Let's see. Punt. I mean, kicking-wise, Brock Walker was solid. He did everything that was asked of him.
How about that storyline where Brock Walker's the kicker? Now, Fleck addressed that after the game, that Lance had, he said, a little bit of a health issue, but it also sounds like Brock Walker might have just beat out Michael Lance during the bye week, which is an interesting storyline in itself. Brock Walker being from Sioux Falls, South Dakota, I believe he's a redshirt freshman, and he looked confident and everything looked good there. I mean, there wasn't a drop off at any point. No missed extra points. He's able to nail his lone field goal from 26 yards. So we'll see kind of going forward if Lance is able to get his job back, if it truly was a health issue. Minnesota's return game continues to be absolutely dreadful. But what's new in that regard?
I actually thought that Jacob Herbers had one of his better games kicking the ball. In spots, he was able to pin him a couple times. And I think maybe most important was that, I don't know, I'm trying to see, KJ Hamler had one return on the day.
Technically was a return. Well, technically it was a negative 15-yard return.
Yeah.
Even though it was his own guy. Oh, my gosh. 6 minutes left in the game. You're punting to KJ Hamler. It's not a great punt.
No.
I believe it was like a 36-yard punt. And it was so short that the gunner, when he set up to block, Hamler had to come forward. And so Hamler tries to field the punt, but it hits the hits him in the helmet. And then somehow Penn State's able to recover that. I mean, Herbers was fine. He gets a couple inside the 20, pins one at the 8, which was a fine kick. The other one, he got a really nice bounce, puts him inside the 20. Inside the 10, excuse me. I don't know. He's fine. And
yeah, my greater point there is that KJ Hamler didn't beat you in the kick game. That was the most important thing.
To be honest, that was the biggest worry for me. Is KJ Hamler, you saw it on Saturday, is so explosive when he gets the ball in his hands. He can make you miss in a phone booth. He has the deep speed to beat you long. There were a couple times where Minnesota was able to get him contained on that kickoff return. You saw DJ Gordon, that true freshman linebacker, be able to make a couple plays on kickoff. He's now got one game remaining. I would assume you use it next week against Iowa before you take him off of kickoff coverage. So, I mean, overall, considering how Minnesota's special teams have played this year, which has been pretty poor, I'd say they played above average overall. I mean, you didn't miss an extra point.
Yeah.
Major lone field goal. KJ Hamler didn't beat you.
Yeah.
Punting game was fine. I mean, considering how low the bar is for the special teams unit, I thought they performed fine.
Yeah, it's one of their better outings on the season for sure. Okay, so real quick before we get into some additional conversation looking forward, both for PJ Fleck and for this 2019 team in general, another word from the Goal Line Club. Again, to save $5 if you're not a member of the Goal Line Club on any of their upcoming events, being the previews and the preview, it's not even plural anymore, preview and the tailgate, use Axed 5 to save $5. Ryan, I know I wasn't able to attend this tailgate, but you told me that it was absolutely bumping. I know talking
the kids
to
kids would say it was lit.
It was
packed. I mean, there were as many people as I've ever seen there. I think it was the biggest tailgate of the season for them. There was well over 300 people there. I think the highlight for me, though, was being able to meet Bobby Bell.
Yeah. Who actually spoke at the preview, right, as well?
He did. And it sounded like people really loved his message there. I was able to meet him and talk with him for 5-10 minutes. Couldn't be a nicer guy. Just being able to have a legend like that, a college football Hall of Famer, an NFL Hall of Famer, and be able to go and say hi to him and meet him and talk to him and his family there was really cool. And to be able to have Tony's there, there were a ton of Insomnia cookies. I know that the drink line for the unlimited drinks was as long as I've seen it, but that just means there's so many more people there. And especially when you're looking at this final game of the season, it's going to be right after Thanksgiving. We're looking at on Monday, potentially record cold highs. I think it's supposed to be 17 degrees on Monday. Now, for you diehards out there, trust me, I was in a tree stand on Friday morning. It was 8 degrees. I wore as many toe warmers as I could, as many hand warmers as I could, put on as many layers as I could. But there's only so much time you can spend out there. And if you want to make sure that time in the cold is reserved for when you're in the stands at TCF Bank Stadium on the 30th, the Goal Line Club tailgate's indoors. You don't have to worry about that. So if you have kids or maybe a better half and you're worried, I want to make sure that they're taken care of and we don't burn out that cold, well, you can come inside. It's unlimited drinks, unlimited food, and it's a bunch of Gopher fans in one place. Plus, though, you can't beat the location, Luke. It's Williams Arena. All you have to do is 30 minutes, 45 minutes before the game starts,
walk across
the street, and you're right there. Mm-hmm. And so, Luke, what is the promo code if you want to save $5 per person at either the preview or the tailgate?
It's Axed 5. If you can put that together, this upcoming game with Wisconsin at home, we play
so
for
it's
Paul
A-X-E-D
Bunyan.
AXED?
Yes, AXED 5. Axed 5. So, absolutely, join the Goal Line Club at any of their upcoming events. It should be pretty great. All right, Ryan, we do have to talk about some big news that happened during the bye week, I guess. The activity was during the bye week, but wasn't announced until...
How long ago does this feel like? It hasn't even been... It's been 5 days.
Yeah.
With everything that's happened in between, the PJ Fleck contract extension, Luke.
Yes, absolutely. So PJ Fleck signs a new contract. He will be around for at least 7 more years, unless somebody wants to pay a massive buyout here now, which is going to be about $10 million. But this keeps him here, and he has been outstated in saying that he and his wife very much love the Twin Cities. They love what they're building at the University of Minnesota, and the university committed a hefty amount of money to him, and he in return signed that contract. And here we go, Ryan, with arguably as much momentum as Gopher football has had, the administration decides to double down and make the commitment to PJ Fleck and staff.
Yeah, so here's what I'll say. For what you need to know about the PJ Fleck contract is I believe he was at 3.1 annually before this. Now he's at 4.6. So where does that stack nationally? Well, before Tuesday, he was the 37th highest paid football coach in the country. But he was only 11th in the Big Ten, and he was the lowest paid coach in the Big Ten West. So now he gets a bump to 4.6 going forward here. That bumps him up to the 22nd highest paid coach in the country. But in relative terms, he's only the 7th highest paid in the Big Ten. I think he bumped above Lovie Smith and Paul Christ. But essentially, all other coaches in the Big Ten West are still making more from him. So to me, this is a great deal. But we can get into that in a second. I also want to make sure folks know that starting on January 1st, Minnesota is going to give the football assistant coaches an additional $1 million. And then in 2021, they're going to give them an additional $200,000 on top of that. I cannot stress to you how important that is, because if you want to be able to keep Kirk Ciarrocca, Joe Rossi, Joe Harris-Simiak, Matt Simon, all guys that are certainly Harris-Simiak and Simon among them rising stars, I certainly think you're going to have to throw more money at Simon and Rossi to stay here. We'll see with Harris Imiak. I'm sure he'll get a bump as well. But you, for, you know, sustainability, you want to be able to keep these coaches in place that are pretty dang good coaches. I think everyone here listening to this podcast knows that Fleck isn't the biggest X's and O's guy out there in the Big Ten. If you ask him to go out there and draw different passing game concepts to help the offense, it's probably not going to be his strength. And so that's why you have to be able to keep these offensive coaches and these defensive coaches that have things going so well right now. But I think the biggest thing that I took away from this is Fleck could have gotten more money, but he didn't ask. He wanted to make sure that, because he was being negative recruited out the wazoo in the last week. And that's why you saw, if you were a Gopher Illustrated member, I mean, 68 and myself had been talking about this for, essentially weeks, that the initial timeline for this was going to be December. But then it was Fleck party that moved it up because they were being negatively recruited by other schools saying Fleck's going to leave for Florida State, USC. And Fleck didn't want any part of that. He's seeing what he's building here. He wants to make sure that he can sustain that. I mean, essentially, Luke, if they would have waited a week, what do you think his – I mean, he could have asked for more money.
I think he could have easily gotten $5 million. Game,
he could have easily gotten $5 million, but to me, it wasn't about the money for him. I think he genuinely likes it here. I don't think he wants to hop around anywhere, and that's where the buyout becomes so key. Before this contract extension or in this new contract in general, so it's a seven-year deal from November 5th going forward. So he gets an additional 3 years. And the buyout goes from $5 million to $10 million. And why that's significant, Florida State and USC and all these different places, they can pay the $5 million. But it's eight figures makes you think a little bit more. Now, certainly teams will be able to pay that, but it also puts Minnesota in such a much in a much better spot if something were to happen.
Right.
That's $10 million that either Fleck or the more seemingly the university that potentially would hire him away would give Mark Coyle and the university – and that's $10 million that you could potentially put forward towards a different coach. Now, that $10 million buyout goes from November 5th all the way to December 31st, 2020. So essentially, to me, that is two off seasons. Now, I know that some coaches come and go between January 1st and January 15th. It happens. I get it. But the way that the early signing period sets up now, I don't think that you would want a coach to come after that signing day because you'd be stuck.
Right.
With an entire recruiting class that you wouldn't have had to send you. And that's such a tough selling point, especially if it's an entire recruiting class that you didn't get a part of, but you're stuck with them.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think Fleck wants to go anywhere. From what I've heard from people close to his party, him and Heather genuinely like it here. There's a reason that he made the decision to move up the timeline. There's a decision that he took less money that he could potentially would have had, especially after a big win against Penn State. I think there's a reason that PJ decided to move up the timeline, sign the contract extension, and that's where, I mean, I talked about it on Gopher Illustrated this morning. I mean, if things continue to break the way that they've been breaking for Minnesota and they end up in the Big Ten championship game, Minnesota will have 1 week to hit the recruiting trail.
Right.
Because that entire first week of December, you'd be game planning for Ohio State, trying to see what you can give them in Indianapolis. And then you have 1 week to recruit, you have one official visit weekend, and then it's the dead period before signing day. I mean, I'm sitting here rubbing my temples, trying to think about, and I know that I've had conversations with people on the Gopher staff, and they're like, you know, it's a great problem to have, but it's also going to be incredibly crazy that week before National Signing Day. And that's where Fleck wanted to make sure that he had all the ammo he could need to potentially go out and poach some commits from other schools and get into some living rooms that he wouldn't traditionally get into. And so that's where with this contract, $4.6 million, and then I believe he gets a bump of $50,000 annually going all the way up until 2026. But the buyout is the big part to me. You have $10 million for the next two off seasons. And even then, I mean, if things continue to go well after next off season, I think you see him get another contract, quote unquote contract extension to up that buyout.
Yeah.
And
I'll quickly jump in here. Sorry, I don't mean to interrupt you,
I'm pretty
good at it, so I'll go with it. So what I will say is, like, yeah, people that are, I have seen some people saying, well, the buyout's only good for, like, you know, a season, right? It's a reservation for a season. But let's think about this real quick. PJ Fleck signed, well, this is his third season. I mean, his second if you start with his year zero theory. His third season, right? He signed his first contract, and even I think before the season started, he had already signed an extension, if you don't get me wrong. But these college football contracts, like, they are constantly revisiting them and renegotiating them.
Absolutely. They're constantly evolving, and even then, you know, I know that so many folks are worried about, well, yeah, but January 1st, 2021, the buyout drops back down to 4.5. Well, if Minnesota continues to have the success that they're having, I think that you should put a lot of trust in Mark Coyle, the way that he's been able to do things with PJ Fleck and
right.
different coaches to keep them here, where if Minnesota, you'll around this time next year, you'll see them revisited again. And things are so fluid and they're always evolving. It sounds like me talking about Gopher football recruiting, but it's that same way with the contracts. So for those of you already stressing out about January 2021, when the buyout goes down from 10 million to 4.5, I wouldn't be worried about that. Just live in the moment, folks. I mean, you have the number seven team in the country that you're living or that you're rooting for. They're 9-0 for the first time in 100+ years. Worry about that later. Just enjoy the ride that you're on.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't think we need to touch on anything else in terms of the contract. I think it's a good thing for the university. Kudos to Coyle and team.
It's a good thing for the university. It sets them up to be in a much better position if something were to happen. Fleck gets a bump. The assistant coaches get a bump.
Right.
Now, for all intents and purposes, it worked out very well for the university and very well for this Gopher football staff.
Yeah. And kudos to Coyle there, one, getting that done. Bringing Fleck here, but then two, getting that extension done and hopefully squashing any concerns that people might have or in letting them focus on the season. Let's jump into just real quick looking forward. There are three games left in the regular season. We can you know, prognosticate on what might be the postseason and, you know, have some aspirations there. But I want to start here first, Ryan. Everybody says that, you know, this is the pivotal game, you know, the pivotal game to change the program. I'm going to actually backtrack on that. I don't think this was the pivotal win that changed the program. I think
it's Wisconsin?
Yeah, I think it's Wisconsin. I, you know, a lot of people, it took people a lot of time to get into this boat, right? And I use boat because I'm affectionately playing off the row the boat thing. But I'll say this, after that Wisconsin win, you know, one, it wasn't at home, so people don't have, it doesn't have as much meaning maybe for people from a instant gratification. They can't go and continue to tailgate, etc. But I was in the practice facility with, I don't know, a couple thousand people. I gave Lee Peterson a hug after that game. Like, that to me was the program changing win, right? You win in a place you haven't won since 1994. Right. And it set things up. Now, I get that this early non-conference slate, the team didn't look great, but they've improved and they've improved and they've improved. And that started last season. Right. And we're benefiting from it this season. Now, there's still a long ways to go. And this was big because I think it got a lot of the fringe football fans maybe starting to pay a little bit more attention. At the end of the day, maybe I'm crazy, but I do think that probably was the real pivotal swing moment. And this really was huge in terms of getting the casual football fan to pay attention.
I think they're both monumental. Now, I get the point you're making in terms of where can you pinpoint a single game to where it really turned the program? I mean, absolutely. I would agree that Wisconsin, the win at Wisconsin, especially in the dominating fashion, if you were able to do it, to number one, get the axe back for the first time in 20-something years with a win in Madison, on the road anyway, and being able to gain bowl eligibility there was so huge. But, I think even still, just the scope and the magnitude of that game on Saturday, where there was 2 weeks of buildup, and there was as many people paying attention to Gopher football as they have in the last 50 years, in my mind. and to have them all in the stadium. I think the maroon out was a pretty good success, all things considered.
All things considered, because that's a hard color to out. Like, no offense, Penn State, but it's pretty easy to buy a big white T-shirt.
Everybody in the world has a white T-shirt.
It's pretty hard to find. It's pretty hard to find a maroon T-shirt unless you're buying Minnesota swag.
And the way that they were executed with the gold towels, the atmosphere was sensational. And the best part is all those casual fans that were at that game, the 50,000 that they were, had a fantastic time. They're able to storm the field, of which, by the way, I'm totally okay with. I get that you're the 17th team in the country, but that win is just so monumental for all the diehards that have been here for so long and wanting to witness a season like this, or the casual fan that now is so much more interested in Gopher football because they, number one, either from their TV or wherever they were, saw Minnesota win a big spot game, or if they came to the game, they were able to rush the field and be a part of an incredible atmosphere. And I think they were both monumental games for different reasons. Now, I think the turning point would probably be Wisconsin for them. I think they turned another corner. I think they're both different type of games in that respect. But I mean, now you won the game. You're the number 7 team in the country, and you're in the driver's seat in the Big Ten. Now, as we record this on Sunday afternoon, the spread for the Iowa game just came out. Can you guess who is favored and by how much?
I would still guess that they're going to favor Iowa, and I guess they'll favor them by 1.
Iowa is favored by 2.
Ah, I was so close.
Vegas is saying this is a pick 'em, which, considering the way that Iowa's been so anemic offensively, I think that's an interesting predicament. Now, we'll get into the Iowa preview later this week, but I mean, that's an interesting line that Vegas is maybe trying to draw some action on, but I would certainly take Minnesota plus 2 in that instance, the way that they have things rolling right now. So with 3 games to play, because Wisconsin beat Iowa, what this essentially comes down to is if Minnesota wins their next 2 games against on 2 road Big Ten games against Iowa, which is ranked number 23 in the country, and then a Northwestern team that is still the Big Ten reigning West champions, they have the Big Ten locked up. And essentially, if that would be the case, the Big Ten West would be locked up. You could book your travel to Indianapolis. That would also essentially guarantee you, in my mind, that unless Penn State beats Ohio State, which would then throw the entire thing into a big mixer bowl, essentially, Minnesota would be the favorite to go to the freaking Rose Bowl. Now, it's crazy for me to say that, considering I wasn't certainly alive the last time Minnesota was in the Rose Bowl, but I think it would be something to where if you were a Gopher football fan and that actually comes to fruition, I don't know what your financial situation looks like, but it's been so long since Minnesota went to the Rose Bowl that I think you would have to find any type of way to get out there and experience that. But it starts this upcoming weekend against an Iowa team. And I know I've already gotten tweets from folks and people on Gopher Illustrated saying, let's worry about that later. It's Iowa championship season. Well, as we sit here today, I think, let me see who the gentleman is here. Tom,
by the way, your job is to like think about this stuff, right?
I mean,
your job is not to coach the team. Your job is to like write stories and build momentum.
I know. I'm just trying to present people the facts. But as we sit here, Tom Wagner, I think.
Tom Wagner. He's a great follow on Twitter. Is it T Wagner 50? Yeah, great follow. So
he tagged me this morning, and according to the advanced statistics and analytics, Minnesota's got a 71% chance to win the West right now. Now, for them to do that, if they slip up against Iowa and Wisconsin doesn't slip up before the Badgers and Gophers play, essentially that Wisconsin game is going to be for the West Championship. Now, I think Minnesota's got a pretty good chance, by pretty good 65-70% chance to win this game in Iowa City this weekend. And if that were the case, and then you win against Northwestern, I mean, you'd have the West wrapped up. And you'd be undefeated going into the Wisconsin game. And we wouldn't be just talking about the Rose Bowl. We'd be talking about the college football playoff, which, again, for me to say that in the year 2019 has just been such a surreal kind of thing to follow. I mean, I've followed this team a long time. I've covered this team for the better part of a decade, and there have been some terrible, terrible seasons. And essentially, it's been mediocre for 50, 60 years. And now we're talking about a top eight team in the country. And that's kind of where Minnesota's at right now, is if they can take care of business.
It's kind of where they're at. It's where they're at.
I mean, it is. And so we're talking about if they can take care of business in Kinnick on 3 o'clock next Saturday, you're going to be heavily favored and you should beat Northwestern. You're going to be an 11-win regular season team, which I'll say again, is crazy to think about. And then you should be favored against Wisconsin and you would have the West wrapped up. And I wonder if College Game Day would be at that one, considering I don't know what the other games are this weekend. But do you think that College Game Day is regretting not coming to Minnesota in hindsight? Well, certainly it's 2020.
Yeah.
But again, this Gopher football team has surpassed any and all expectations we had for them. And you're talking to two guys that, I mean, I predicted Minnesota was going to be 9-3 before the year. I'm one of the people.
I was 8-4. I was even more pessimistic.
I'm pretty sure I predicted them to win the Big Ten West. But even I was apparently too low on them. So the situation is this. If Minnesota wins their next two games, they win the Big Ten West outright before Wisconsin. They play Wisconsin. Now, if they lose against Iowa or Northwestern and Wisconsin beats, I think they have Nebraska and Purdue left before the Gophers. Well, then the Big Ten West is going to be decided Saturday at TCF Bank Stadium, and of which that atmosphere should be packed regardless. I mean, I think that game's going to sell out much quicker than what this Penn State game did. Now, if Wisconsin drops a game, so say they lose to Nebraska this upcoming weekend, they have to travel to Lincoln.
Mm-hmm.
Adrian Martinez is now healthy, and I think Wandale Robinson will be as well. If, say, Nebraska can get their stuff together and give the Badgers, you know, a run for their money and let alone beat them, then Minnesota can, again, drop one of the next two games and clinch it beforehand. But things are trending positively for Minnesota to win the Big Ten West. According to the advanced analytics, they got a 71% chance because they won and Wisconsin won. But if Iowa would have won this past weekend, it would have been Minnesota wins against Iowa. They clinch the West. But because Wisconsin was able to kind of pull it out there, the Gophers still have some business to take care of. But again, we're talking about a team, folks. This is you're not dreaming. This is the number 7 team in the country in offense that has scored 28 or more points in every single game for the first time in Golden Gopher football history. A team that is projected to go to the Rose Bowl. I'll have the full projections out on Gopher Illustrated on Monday. And for those of you who have been on the fence about joining Gopher Illustrated, it is 2 months for $1 right now. That is 50 pennies per month. Luke, we talk about this a lot. I have no idea in 2019 what you get for a dollar. No idea. But 2 months of Gopher Illustrated for $1 right now. That gets you through the rest of the football season, through National Signing Day, which is going to be, I'm already stressed out about the lack of sleep that I'll be getting trying to provide all the updates for you folks on Gopher Illustrated. That gets you past the January 1st bowl game and into the Big Ten basketball season in January. If you like the podcast and you've been following us for years and you want to support me and what I do at Gopher Illustrated, it's a dollar. I'm pretty sure you could find that in your couch. And I would, you know, there's been a lot of people that have joined and they're very excited about this team and I'm incredibly grateful and incredibly humble for it. But all you have to do is go to Gopher Illustrated and join for monthly. It'll be $1 and it'll get you through January 10th before it ups. And we got that CBS All Access now a part of it. So especially if you're I've had some people tell me they're big European soccer fans. I think UEFA, whatever the biggest European league is over there.
Well, there's the EPL, the English Premier League, right?
Okay.
And then there's the UEFA Cup, which they basically play for, which is the Spanish
league. I literally know nothing about European soccer.
All right.
I don't have time to follow any of that. And apparently that's all the UEFA?
Yeah, the UEFA Cup. Yep.
Is going to be, apparently CBS just bought the rights for that, so it's all going to be streamed on there. And it's all included in a 247 membership for free. It's $100 value, and it's for free. So if you've thought about joining GI, we've had a ton of people come on board. And like I said, I think we were, in the last week here, we're like the number one site on the network in terms of new subscriptions. I'm so thankful for all of you. You're incredibly incredibly awesome. And you allow me to do this and really dedicate a lot of my time to it. So, Luke, we got the stretch run here. 3 weeks, potentially an Indianapolis Big Ten championship game, potentially a Rose Bowl. If you're not excited about this Gopher football team, I don't know what to tell you, but it's been a wild ride, and I'm excited that this podcast is going to be covering some crazy important games here down the stretch.
Absolutely. So if this is your first time listening, one, thank you for joining us. We understand that we're not for everyone. We go a little deeper than your standard radio station or podcast, and it's going to actually get a lot more nerdy the next time Derek Burns joins us to break down the Iowa game. So
yeah,
thanks for the try.
Back. Yeah, we try to do our best without Derek. I know that we're not as an elite football minds as he is, but he should be back here for the remaining, hopefully, five games on the schedule. Iowa, Northwestern, Wisconsin, then hopefully the Big Ten championship game, and then the bowl game as well. So if you were disappointed that Derek wasn't here, I know that he was disappointed as well. I will also say the Gopher Gridiron Radio staff has bought him a new headset. So the sound quality for Mr. Derek Burns should be much better than what it was on that previous podcast.
Yeah, absolutely. So we want to thank everybody for listening. Per usual, we've seen actually 38% growth once again from September to October, where September was actually our largest month. It's absolutely absurd. So thank you so much for everybody for listening.
So thankful for all of you guys. We really, really are.
Yeah. So thanks a lot. If you could rate and review the podcast on whatever aggregator you listen to, which, by the way, a lot of you listen on iTunes or on Apple Podcasts. Podcast. That's ridiculous. Like 65% of you listen on Apple Podcasts, but
I didn't know the world was so run on these Apple phones. I mean, Luke, you have an Apple phone, right?
Yeah, absolutely. You used to, and then you got rid of it.
Well, I'm still happy with my Google Pixel, but even still, if you have a buddy or something that is now tuning into Gopher football and he wants to know more about the team and you think he would enjoy this podcast, I think word of mouth for the thousands of you that are listening each and every episode, if you could tell somebody about it and you think they would enjoy it, we'd love for you to tell them about the podcast here, because as many people as we can spread the Gopher football gospel to, we'll take it.
Yeah, and shout out to the 3% of the women that listen. You guys are the best. I'd like to see many more women listen, more than just my mom. So, okay, again, thank you all for listening, and go Gophers.